there, Jess.
Hello. How are you, Elsie?
Oh, just peachy. I hear you're eating nuts.
I am a big bag of nuts.
Oh, nuts are yum.
It's
what kind of nuts are you having?
I'm allowed to eat. Big bag of salty nuts. It's Filberts, almonds, walnut, cashews. That's it. No peanut. Because Kate told me peanuts have an angry energy.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. That was the funniest thing. That was you funny. Like, now you said that you will never be able to look at peanuts again without
feeling. Well, I'll be honest with you. Like, when I have, not to get, I'm already off topic. But, like, now.
We just started. We're already off topic.
When I eat nuts before bed, if I eat peanuts, I will almost inevitably wake up choking on them.
Oh.
Whereas, like, other nuts, if I eat nuts before bed, that like, almonds are fine.
Uh-huh.
But peanuts, they are angry.
Yes, because almonds are the calming, soothing, meditative sort.
Yeah, they're like, yes. I don't know. Peanuts just go, they just come in and F shit up, I guess. Interesting how I chose the F.
I know, right? Oh my God. Especially with all the nuts and the salts and stuff. But yeah, I love my almonds. Almonds are my happy nut.
That was a good one.
So, you know, I found this article. This was shared by one of my friends who knows like my stance on voice. Like, we've had in-depth conversations about women's voice and speaking up and all that stuff. Because as we have often spoken about in this podcast, I have a little bit of trouble sometimes speaking my mind in, you know, standing up for myself, if you will. That like, that's just something that's something that always arises, and I'm getting much better at it. But I'm at least a huge advocate for it now. Before, I would just like shudder into the corner and cry and, you know, all that fun stuff. But yeah. This article is from the New York Times, and it's called Learning to Love Criticism. And I think this really aligns with, you know, one of our other episodes that we put out about negative feedback, which was episode number 17. And I know that there are a lot of people, the fat shaming episode, which we talked a lot about negative feedback and dealing with it. But this is really intriguing. I'm gonna read you a little bit from this article. And of course, we'll have links in the show notes, which you can see directly from the device that you're listening to, I'm sure, for most of you. This says, a new study by the linguist and tech entrepreneur Kieran Snyder, done for Fortune.com, found two differences between workplace performance reviews given to men and women. Across 248 reviews from 28 companies, managers, whether male or female, gave female employees more negative feedback than they gave their male employees. Second, 76% of the negative feedback given to women included some kind of personality criticism, such as comments that the woman was abrasive, judgmental, or strident. Only 2% of the men's critical reviews included negative personality comments. The study speaks to the impossible tightrope women must walk to do their jobs competently and to make tough decisions while simultaneously coming across as nice to everyone all the time. But the findings also point to something else. If a woman wants to do substantive work of any kind, she's going to be criticized with comments, not just about her work, but also about herself. She must develop a way of experiencing criticism that allows her to persevere in the face of it, unquote.
Yeah.
How about that?
Oh, I've lived this. I already know this. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, what's really intriguing to me about this whole thing, too, is the fact that it's not so much about the speaking your mind and what that kind of stuff, but the fact that you do get these commentaries about your personality in workplace performance. And
of course.
And I don't think that it's about workplace either. I think that is something that also happens in, you know, whatever kind of endeavor that you have in the industry, whether it's especially in new media, because people really do kind of tend to align with perhaps women who are doing work where they seem sweet and nice and cute and funny. But if you're doing something a little more abrasive, there tends to be a little bit more off-put, like, you know, Chelsea Handler, right?
Yeah, I would say yes. But her personality is her brand.
True. That's true. But she's gotten a lot of pushback, though, because, you know, like she said, like she tells it like it is. We've talked about this in the past as well, you know, where she stands her ground and she doesn't, you know, she's always done things her way, but it's not like she's not been, I guess, you know, what still gets me is the fact that it becomes about a personality as opposed to her work as a comedian, which seems to me like people, again, we're going to
like
go
Joan,
back.
Joan Rivers.
Like
too.
Joan Rivers, of course. But we're going back again to your guy, Howard Stern. Well, you know what I mean? It's like if he gets criticized, sometimes it is because he's abrasive and stuff like that, but usually not as much as I feel happens with women. It's like there's a lot more criticism about personality for women than there is for men.
Well, if you asked him, I mean, he would say that people hate him.
He would say, yeah. What? Would you're diving into your nuts.
I'm done. Sorry. People hate him.
True.
And he's the first person to say, people hate me. And if you watch his movie, that movie, like you can, you know, even though it's a reenactment, you can see people just call him an asshole right to his face all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure he's the best.
That's true.
A better example might be like Jimmy Kimmel. I don't think people criticize Jimmy Kimmel as much as they did Chelsea Handler. And I tried to watch an episode of Jimmy Kimmel like, oh God, maybe a month ago, something I'd never done before. And we're like 20 minutes into it. And I was like, this guy is a jerk.
Oh.
He's just not funny. And he's a jerk. Like there's nothing funny about what he does at all. I don't think he's mean.
I haven't really watched him very much. I don't really watch that much. Well, I don't have TV. Huh.
Well, I used to watch him on The Man Show. You don't have TV.
Well, I don't. I mean, I have it, you know, I have Netflix.
Yeah.
I have YouTube.
Yeah,
podcasts.
YouTube. You can probably get a good idea of Jimmy Kimmel from YouTube.
Yeah.
But like, I thought, I don't know. I thought Chelsea was funny. She's sarcastic. I think Jimmy just is like snipey, snarky, bitter, angry. It's different. Howard is disgusting because it's funny. Different.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
So, but I think. You know, again, I think Jimmy Kimmel is, like I said, I think he's a jerk, and I think he doesn't get called out for being a jerk nearly as much as he should be if he's that jerky, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel that there tends to be a, at least for me, you know, whenever you put stuff out online, it just seems like we tend to, at least as women or for myself, my in was always because I was the nice one. Like, that was always my in, you know, because I was the nice one. It's like, I was raised to be that, the nice one. It's like, you're just nice. And to my detriment, it didn't help me speak up because I always had that feeling of like, I have to be nice about this. I have to, you know, put up with this to some degree. And, you know, in most of the jobs that I had or any kind of endeavor that I put out there, it was just because I happened to, that's how I won people over. I'm nicer. I'm so nice that you can't be mean to me.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I got my tips.
About you. No,
that's how I dealt with, you know, with people that were obnoxious at work. I killed them with kindness, even if they were being just horrible to me.
If you're listening and you hate Elsie, write in so she can experience what it's like. Because apparently nobody ever has.
Well, I think that part of it is the fact that I tried my best to, you know, to do that. And but again, you know, when I saw those iTunes reviews, though, Jess, if you, like, honestly, you could go onto my iTunes page and you can go to the 1-star reviews and then you could see the people that hate me because they're awful.
Yeah, they're mean.
They're totally mean. And like I said, I don't know if I've told you this before, but even on YouTube, you know, I used to do videos on YouTube. Like right around 2006, I was doing a lot more video production than I did now. I kind of, you know, I just had more time to do video. And people, it was awful the things that they said to me on those comments. And they were just so petty. Like, why don't you put some chapstick on your lips, girl?
What's that got to do with anything?
Right? And I'm going, why are you focusing on my lips being dry? Like, what is that even? And how do you, what? You know,
that's
but
it's weird.
It's, isn't it? It's just bizarre.
Now I want to see if I have any negative reviews. But again, people are going to be nice to me, even if I'm not nice. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I just thinking that this kind of thing, especially in our culture right now, that one of the reasons that I do love podcasting is the fact that you can say these things. You can say them to some degree behind something so that people can hear your voice, get to know mm-hmm. you. And then, you know, I've heard people be more honest in a podcast than I have in any other kind of form, any medium.
Mm-hmm. The lowest I have is a 3-star review, but it was still favorably spoken about, which is weird.
Oh, well, still though. I mean, I have awful 1-star reviews. So
yeah.
It's
yeah, but you have an older show, but I want to look at, let me look at yours.
Oh my God. They're meanies, those people.
The thing is, I've been fired a lot.
Do people just come up to you and just say like, you're fired?
No.
Or,
but the feedback that I've been given really didn't have to do with my work. One time I was fired because I wasn't a people person. One time I was fired because I was too abrasive with the VPs.
Oh, get out.
I'm not kidding you. I'm seriously not kidding you. Your work is great, but the VPs think you're a little too abrasive.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh, really? Really? Because I thought I was being super nice. And the problem with giving feedback on a person's personality is, especially if they don't realize, I mean, first of all, it's so subjective. Somebody could say that I'm abrasive. I'm sure people listening think I'm abrasive. But like when you're being nice to someone, like for me, first of all, you must understand I would never disrespect someone of a higher authority of me. Certainly not in a new job. So if I think I'm being as nice as humanly possible and I'm just being – but if they ask my opinion and I either disagree or say, well, what if we did it this way? Or what if we, you know, I'm not sure it'll fit. I mean, is it because I disagreed? Did they not like my tone of voice? Is my voice too deep? Is my, you know, did I blink too much? Like you literally have no idea what it is you do to affect the other person. And therefore it's not constructive criticism because you have no idea how to make it better. Too abrasive is like, is that mean too? I mean, I know what abrasive means, but like, what does it mean to you?
Right.
What does it mean to her?
Right.
You know, just if I'm too loud, I'll whisper. What does it mean? You know, like.
I don't understand. I don't understand how one could, I don't know. It's the hardest thing to do in terms of personality and also looks, because you can't really fix some of the things, like, well, at least in the entertainment industry, that were like, the feedback that I would get is that I wasn't Latina enough. And what does that mean? And I can't fix that.
What?
Yeah. That's the feedback that I got. So it was really frustrating for me. And so you would get angry, or I would get angry about the whole thing. And it made me
not end every sentence with amigo. Will that do it for you?
Well, that I didn't look the part. It wasn't, you know what I mean?
What?
That I didn't look Latina enough because of whatever they thought the look was, right? And it was just like, do you not have, I mean, if you really like my work, you would put a wig on me, you would curl my hair, you could put contacts in my eyes and cover and make them brown, whatever you want. If you want me to do that, that would be great. It's just that there's no, and also as an actor, like, what do you say to that? Okay. Like, you can't fix, you can't get better at that. You can't.
Right.
You know, but what, and I know that when you're saying, talking to somebody like in terms of abrasiveness, it's the same thing. Like what is the, how do I make that better? Or like, how do I work on that? Or is there a way to, I don't know, soften the edges, but you don't even know what to soften.
But also you're not supposed to get a job based on your winning personality. I mean, like, yes, because let me tell you, I can interview for anything. I'm the best interviewer on the planet. I can interview for any job. I know exactly what to say. I know when to be funny. I know when to be smart. I can get any job. I'm not even kidding you, because I have. And that's why I've been fired so many times, probably, is because I get a job and it's not quite the right job. And then I end up losing that job for whatever reason. But when I lose a job because of my personality is really the most baffling part, because it's like, well, that's not what – yeah, I mean, I know you liked me in the interview, but like – also, I have these skills that you need here.
Yeah.
And why does it matter if I don't, you know, I don't know, if I don't seem to be a team player. What does that mean?
I know, right?
that was a good one, too.
That's a good one, too. Well, that I guess it's just because you don't...
Did I not hug you enough? What?
Well, maybe it's because you think that you only do things your way and or the highway, I guess. You know, I don't know.
It's all perceived. No one ever tells you.
That's right.
Would you do something a different way if you were asked? Sure. What do I care?
Right.
Just feed my children.
That's right.
For the love of God. I don't care. I mean, there were so many years where I was just like, I will literally attempt to do a cartwheel because I can't do one in front of the building every day, all day, if you just feed my children. Seriously, I don't, you know, that's my entire incentive. Do it.
You see, you know? That?
Yeah. So, and again, that's why I had to interview so much. I couldn't just not have a job. Had right. to.
You but had you, to have a but, job.
So 76% are told that it's all about their personality. And like, it's so, I think it's really hard to compare your average worker bee with people who are celebrities. Only because, even though I see a vast difference between women, like on TV shows or characters or this or that, I feel like that part shouldn't come into play so much. And the fact that men aren't being dinged on their winning personalities, which believe me, I've come in contact with several. Pardon my door. My house is a disaster today, isn't it? just get interrupted constantly. I hope I don't have to answer that.
Lots of ding dings, lots of ding dings.
You know what, Elsie? I think I might, only because she's not walking. Like, a lot of times people will come, leave something on the porch, ring the doorbell, and walk back, but she's not.
Oh, so my God.
I have to interrupt.
Okay, no worries.
Our show for the door. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. 1 second. I'm sorry, Elsie.
That's okay.
The mail lady. Away from me.
Oh my God.
And I was like, where are you going? Wait. God, I can't go that fast. Anyway.
All right. So here's another part of this discussion that I think starts to play with the topic, which is why women don't listen to podcasts. And follow my logic here. So here's a quote from that same article. There's another deeper factor that informs women's relationship to criticism and praise. For centuries, women couldn't protect their own safety through physical, legal, or financial means. We couldn't rely on the law if our safety was threatened. We couldn't use our own money to escape or safeguard ourselves and our children because we could not own property. Being likable or at least acceptable to stronger, more powerful others was one of our primary available survival strategies. For many women around the world, this is still a reality, but all women inherit the psychological legacy of that history. Disapproval, criticism, and the withdrawal of others' approval can feel so petrifying for us at times, life-threatening even, because of the millenniums it was, unquote. Which I think was really intriguing because I never thought about it from the perspective of like that, you know, being nice and like being liked was like a survival mechanism. I mean, back in the day.
I think, you know? I agree with everything in that paragraph except for one statement.
Okay.
The statement about us inheriting psychological legacy of that history. I was not born feeling like I had to survive on my personality. My mother might have felt that way, but I didn't feel that way. I think that that's starting, if it hasn't already, broken. I definitely don't see my daughter trying to win any personality contests either.
But you know what, though? I think that you're right. But see, well, this gets us into a deeper discussion. But I feel that there are some of us that see that and some of us that don't. So that part of that, you know, that the psychology behind that or perhaps like a cultural mindset is in fact sometimes broken and sometimes not. But it really requires somebody to actively break it. You know, there's a lot of things that I'm actively making sure I am watching in the way that I speak to my daughter, because regardless, there are times when my mom comes out of my mouth or my grandmother comes out of my mouth.
And you say late, you know, nice girls don't wear that to school.
And
you know, that
kind of stuff. So or things that I've heard, or and it's interesting because the only reason I question some of that is after it comes out of my mouth and I'm like, why am I saying that? Oh, because my mom said that to me. And so then I go, oh, all right. Like, I didn't even question that. It just came out. And so then I will have to go back and go, I'll have to find a different way of saying that, because it's just, it's taken for granted that that's what stopped me from doing stuff, or, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, like I said, I agree with a lot of it. I know, and you see watching, again, because this is my only frame of reference is television ever, but like, when you watch period pieces and you see women be conniving based on their personality, and look how many characters there are like that. I mean, like on Sons of Anarchy, like the mother, really, you know, that's a perfect example of actually that could be a period piece.
Right.
I know you probably don't watch that, but it's about a motorcycle gang and the main character, Jax, and Peggy Bundy, the woman is the mother. But I swear I'm going to have a fur scarf in a minute. She is making me so angry. Don't mess with a pregnant lady, you furry little... God. Be quiet. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Oh, now she's next to me. No wonder I couldn't find her. So this woman, you know, she is completely powerless. Because her husband and her son were the... You know, they run the show of the motorcycle gang and the business and everything else. And the only power she ever has is when she's manipulating other people. Because she has no money of her own, no way of making money out of her own unless she's manipulating other people, helping the club. She bakes cake. She watches the kids. It's like her whole thing. But she's one of the most powerful characters because she's such a conniving, manipulating personality. And so, and that's actually a modern example. But if you do look at, I don't know, any example of historical women, a lot of times that is all they have is their brain, because they just like it says, can't trust the law, can't trust your husband sometimes, you certainly couldn't make enough money on your own, you definitely can't overpower wearing those corsets, you're not going to arm wrestle anybody out of their cash, right? So you kind of, you have very few choices.
Yeah.
And being a personality and relying on whether you were nice or not nice could work in your favor, depending on who you are.
True. Yeah. So, and that, you know what? I hadn't thought about it in that respect. Yeah. So,
No,
go ahead.
Well, let's just take, so we took like Sons of Anarchy, but let's go. I know I always come back to Joan Rivers. But there's another example, like being nice didn't work in her favor, but it sure did make her, you know, Her mean made her a ton of money at a time when no other women were on stage being funny. None. Zero. It was her and flipping Johnny Carson and whoever else was. I mean, she started working in like 1960, way before Seinfeld and the guys on Saturday Night Live and whoever. Rob Williams. She's way older than them. So like, again, she relied on her personality. And people called her abrasive and ugly. I mean, this probably a lot of her plastic surgery BS was due to the fact that she was the only woman and people would joke about how ugly she was.
Yeah.
I mean, she was no beauty, but she certainly didn't have to scream and run away, you know, but.
No, but you know what? And that's why it's such a challenge to beat that from your own head. You know, when somebody continually criticizes you in those ways, you to some degree start believing it, even if it's into your subconscious. You might make certain choices in the way that you put a skirt on that you wouldn't in another time, or maybe don't wear a shirt because somebody said that, I don't know, it was inappropriate for whatever setting. I remember that I've stopped myself a couple of times from wearing something I wanted to wear because somebody, one person, made a comment one time and I'm like, oh, second guessing my own choice. And I thought, wow, that was like one person that made that comment and it's and they don't even matter in my life. Like, and it's affecting me at this moment. It's just, you know, so the reason that I kind of wanted to think about this sort of mindset and even getting back to the psychological legacy to some degree that, you know, that we may or may not need to address. There are ways in which I believe, and I may be stepping on some poop here, but it just seems like there are times when we as women don't gravitate towards technological advances faster, which is given from the fact of this like cultural, like not being in the office and having like the cool computers faster, not being able to work with certain operating systems before, not perhaps having a cell phone before your husband did. If, you know, in that day, like when cell phones were coming around, having your own Walkman, having, you know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of like little bits and pieces of maybe technology that boys or men are given before women are, or it's just, they're more available for that. Cause I remember my brothers got the video games. I didn't get the video games. Not that I wanted the video games, but you know, huh?
This is weird. That's such an interesting perspective. I can't relate to that perspective, but it's really interesting.
Is it? Well, see, because this is what I'm talking about now, because I'm trying to bring it all the way to over here, over to here, as in like
the relevant story topic.
Why women don't listen to podcast topic. So then that means that our way in which we interact with technology is based upon the way that culture dictates that for us as women. So the majority of the time that I've seen the most interaction from women, starting way back when I started to get into Twitter and all that stuff, was all that was not, that wasn't even in Twitter very much. There were a handful of women, now that I started to think about, that I knew then. But the major uptake was when everybody started to go into Facebook. And that's still the case. I mean, the conversation in Facebook for me involves a lot more conversations between women from a variety of different age, you know, like my mom's on Facebook. I think that there's people's grandmothers on Facebook, like people, grandmothers as in like grandmothers of people like us are on Facebook. And then there's that some teenagers are now not necessarily on Facebook. They're moving to other places, but it still seems like it's like a place the way that AOL used to be, you know, like AOL was like the internet mm-hmm. for some people. And it just seems to me that that feels like a comfortable place to be. And if you go like go into a different social network, or you go read a blog or go consume this content, it just, for me, from what I have seen from more women, they're a little bit more consumed in an easier place like Facebook, as opposed to going somewhere else to get content. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Where, you know, having to go into iTunes to search for something in iTunes and download it to your, it's like, isn't that for music? Like, it just, it's not part of their everyday experience. It was for me. So I know that there are, I'm not talking about every woman, and I'm not talking about, you know, there's a lot of women that were pioneering a lot of tech stuff and have been podcasting for many years and have done some incredible work in the podcast world. And there's so much education that goes around in terms of those women that are doing that. But I'm talking about the mainstream, the ones that watch the news, and that's all that they get, right? They don't know that there's other options, or people who are watching The View a lot, and that's how they get their, you know, conversation between women. It's like you watch The View or The Talk or, you know, whatever, women getting together and talking about women stuff, and Oprah. And that's how people are influenced, or that's what women are influenced to do. I guarantee you, if Oprah said, go listen to this podcast or download these podcast app or do that, they will do it, because it's coming from a peer and it's coming from something that they know. I just think that it's not as easy to get to a woman and say like, hey, listen to this podcast. I don't know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did I lose you?
No, you didn't lose me. I'm just sort of thinking philosophically about, I guess, what I've observed.
Well, because see, this is the thing too, Jess. You're very tech advanced. Like, you're in it. Like, we're preaching to the choir here. I mean, some of these women that are listening to our podcast already, like, they're not what I'm talking about. That's not.
They still know women who aren't, and they could probably speak to why they aren't. And the only thing I can, I mean, like my sister had an aversion for a really long time to tech stuff. It was probably psychological, but like, she's just getting over it now, and she's perfectly willing and capable of doing anything she wants to in the technology world. But there's certain stuff. So there's a couple different levels, right? So the first So level one technophobe for women is, and anything I can't work falls into this category. I can't be bothered. Like, my husband has a very intricate stereo. It has speakers. It has speakers on top of those speakers. It has one. I'm just staring. You know, my system has, like, I see the DVD player and then I see the cable box. And, like, those are the only two things I recognize. There's, like, at least three other boxes. I don't know what they do or why they're there. And I'm not that interested. They never turn on. I don't know why we need them. I'm not interested. And there's a million buttons. It's like using a mixer. I don't know what they're for. I don't know why I need it. I can't be bothered. And right. So I think similarly, a lot of women, you know, like, they get an iPhone. And my dad is like this, actually, because he is one of the – growing up, I always had the newest tech crap. And it was because of him, because he was in video production. So we always had a video camera. Other families didn't have one. We always had newer TVs, newer stereo, newer remotes. But now that he's older, he's just like, I have an iPhone and I can text and use Facebook. And otherwise, I don't bother. He just doesn't bother. I mean, I think that's part of it. So that's level one. Level two is, I think women are cuter if they don't know how to work technology. And I think women out there think, I need to rely on a man for something or he'll leave. And I'm not saying it's conscious, but I observe it a lot.
Right.
You know, like, oh, my husband does all my... These are the women who are like, my husband, even though he has a full-time job and doesn't know doodles about coaching, is my business partner. Because he and I make all the decisions. I have to approve every little purchase I make through my husband because I'm too cute and pretty to know what I'm talking about. Mm. And so that's level two. And I think those women are probably women who aren't listening to podcasts because, oh, I don't know how to work my iPhone. I don't know iTunes. I don't know. My husband does all that. I'm too cute and pretty to do that.
Well, you know, I mean, there's part of it. There's that. And there's also just exactly the same person that doesn't really necessarily make that excuse, but just isn't interested. It's like they have their iPhone and they're just busy or not interested. Like they just want to make phone calls, text, and go on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. It's pretty much, but that's what I meant by number one. Can't be bothered.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then
not interested.
So how do we break through that? Because I'm sure that these women are just highly intelligent women who have plenty of things to say or to be inspired or are wanting more, but they are looking for it perhaps in Facebook and the interactions that they might possibly see there because, you know, media is thrown in your face all the time. It's, you know, every time you click onto a BuzzFeed like link, all of a sudden you only see BuzzFeed links all over your face. And then you're done, you know, lost doing all kinds of quizzes and watching these random videos.
Yeah.
That are, you know, and they suck that out of you. With the podcasting thing, for me, it was an empowering thing because I was able to do it outside of the home. Like I was able to do it when I'm walking. I'm able to do it while I was, you know, biking, when I was shopping, when I was like, it just was my escape. And I found it because I had a curiosity to find it. Right. So how do we somehow make women more curious about knowing what's out there to do stuff, to just dive into finding something that they're interested about instead of having it be fed to them.
But isn't that kind of like saying, how do we get women to read more books? Like if they have the time.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the reason I ask is just because at first I was going to say, is it similar to asking why women don't do more yoga or bike more? Because we all know the benefits, and yet we either do it or we don't do it. We either enjoy it or we don't enjoy it. And the thing is, most people have tried biking and yoga, whereas like most people have not tried podcasting. And that's the key. The difference between every other activity and podcasting is the women who aren't listening have never tried it. Whereas like everyone can read a book. You either have the time or you don't. You either feel like going to the bookstore or you don't. You either feel like finding something that's interesting to you or you don't. But with podcasting, I think there's another element, which is I don't know how, and I don't feel like learning. Yeah. Because I'm sitting here thinking, well, let's ask them. Let me go on Facebook and ask women. I only want women who don't listen to podcasts, tell me why you don't.
Yeah.
And And then, but then I'm afraid, first of all, they'll go, I've always wanted to listen to yours, but I don't have the, I don't want to hear excuses. You know, I don't want to make people feel defensive either. I legitimately just want to know what prevents you from trying it. And maybe I should just ask, if I ask the question correctly, maybe I'll get the right answer.
Yeah, I think that
what has prevented you from trying a podcast or listening to a podcast?
Do you even know what a podcast is? Because that's the conversation that I want to have. I want to have a conversation with somebody that hasn't had, you know, that
we know people
that they don't know that, like, I don't like to talk
to
them. It's
just MP3. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to see if they even know what that is on their phone or if they're interested. And it really isn't about judgment again. And especially women. And that's what I want to know. Especially women. Is it because you just, honestly, you can't be bothered. Like, you just would rather watch a YouTube video. Maybe that's, I'm just trying to figure that out. Like, maybe they are just more used to the YouTube ecosystem. Maybe they would rather, I don't know, listen to a CD.
I think most women will give you the excuse of busy, but that doesn't mean it's accurate. That's the thing. I don't even know if even asking them is worth the time, because they'll just say, I'm too busy. I really want to, but I'm too busy to learn how to do it. But it's such bullshit.
Right. But that's what I'm thinking about. Like, why, like, what's the deal here? So is Netflix too hard for you to figure out? Because it's almost the same thing. You know?
I mean, you seem to have no problem with Orange is the New Black, right?
Well, yet, yeah, because
somehow you can't work your own phone. Mm-hmm.
Because it's about the same thing. It's the same exact thing. It's like you download it. It's like Netflix.
Yeah.
So it's just intriguing for me in terms of the consumption, because I think that there is some sort of, it might be a mind thing. It might be just the fact that it might feel harder than it is. And it's like, maybe it's because I have forgotten, because I'm attached to my phone, right? My phone's on me like all the time. I'm like always with close to my phone to some degree. But then maybe there's these people who are these people who leave their phone like in the kitchen and then go about their day and forget about it all day long.
Of course.
You know?
And then I guess type three are people who are literally have a psychological like aversion to technology.
Okay. Yeah. Then there's those.
and they're either afraid. And this is why they can't use Facebook or have a website or do anything else, because they're just afraid they're going to mess it up. Yeah. And actually, some people are out there who should be afraid that aren't, because they do mess it up every time. But like, yeah. So like in case of my sister, like my mom, this is why I found your original story so hard to relate to, because like I said, I grew up having a lot of the latest stuff, and my dad, I mean, from age 10 taught me how to use a video camera and how to pan in and pan out. And so I've never really been afraid, because it's always been there and we've always had it first. So like, I always have been, I don't know, in some ways technologically more advanced than other people. But on the other hand, it's like, and then my mother, we got a computer when I was 12. My mom learned a lot about, it was an IBM PC Junior. My mom learned a lot about it. And then we had always had Windows machines, and, she just immediately knew their inner workings like an instinct almost. Like, she could always fix it, and she always knew what was wrong with them much more than my dad. She just like understood them. But then also my parents, when I was in high school, well, I was right after my first year of college, my parents got divorced, and my mom spent a lot of time chatting with friends on the internet, male, not just dating stuff, but like friends that weren't judging her for being divorced. Friends that were far away. And my sister was younger, you know, she was like 15, 16. She was younger than me at the time. And she was pissed off about it, probably, you know, and she probably carried that teenage angst with her, so that when everyone was using email and computers and everyone was doing it, she was just like, I'm definitely not touching that. That's, you know, like,
yeah,
like in her head, it was like technology ruins lives.
Right. Because was so not my thing, you know, because we also didn't, like, financially, we weren't able to have these fun technological things, because generally speaking, those things were more expensive.
Right.
But, you know, and I did get a Walkman, and I did get like music kind of devices, because my dad has always been a very music lover kind of thing.
I had a boombox, but yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, I had that kind of stuff. And my grandfather was a big techno lover. He was one of those super highly advanced, like, techno, like, he just loved anything that was new. Like, I remember him, he had his tiny little TV, like, a, you know, those, like, really small TVs that he had with him, and he used to watch that in the late 70s, like, early 80s, which was not when people were having these tiny little TVs. Like, he would love to have had, like, an iPhone watch, like, to watch TV kind of thing. I mean, he was on a computer till he passed away, very late into his life, but he was always into that stuff. So I observed it, but I was not, you know, we didn't have a computer when I was growing up. I think I was in high school, or I might have even been in college when my parents got a computer. So I would have already been out of the house when they got their first computer. And the first time that I remember being on a computer was in college, in the computer place, where I had to go sit there and write my, you know, essays and whatnot. And the first time I had my own computer was like in 2000. That was like the first time that I bought my own laptop.
Interesting.
So I, you know, and I was afraid of it. That's, you know, which is, I didn't even know. I think it was even later than that. It might have been like, I don't know. But anyway, it was, and I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know what the internet was. I had no idea what browsers. I mean, I had no clue about anything whatsoever. So, and then I remember hearing people talking about blogging. Like, I was at the restaurant that I worked in, and one of my managers started a blog, and she said, I had a blog. And I'm like, what the hell is a blog? And she was like, oh, you just write online, and you know, there's article, you just write stuff and they come out and it's published for everybody to read. And I was thinking, like, why would you want that? Like, who does that? It seemed to me like it was a journal. And I'm like, if I'm going to be writing on my journal, that's the whole point. I'm going to put it on my, underneath my blanket, not for everybody to read. Why? So, and it was actually, it was podcasting that got me out of that whole mindset. And it was late in my life. So I had a completely different take on everything. I'm sure if I would have been in, I don't know, in college, I would have more likely than not, been very open to podcasts at that time, because I was listening to the college radio station. I loved everything that was sort of avant-garde and in the fringes, but I don't know. Technology was just not part of who I was. Like, I never had it as part of me. So it was there was a lot of fear involved with everything. I remember even getting the microphone, not knowing where to stick the microphone. I didn't know who to ask, like, how do you record it? And so a podcaster, specifically one man, Victor Cajiao, when I was listening to his podcast, he talked me through this in a really kind way where I felt so kind of inept, and he helped me through it so that I could trust that I could do it. He just totally helped me. He helped me how to search. You know, when I had a problem, I was always emailing him, and he's like, this is how you do it. You search in Google.
Yeah.
You read the support articles and you do what they say.
So. Yeah. And there's no way. I mean, yeah, but I mean, and I've spent a lot of my career telling people, look, it's nothing's permanent. If you screw it up, you can always just go back, undo, make changes, delete. It's never permanent. It's not like on paper where you, like, it's out there forever and everyone will judge you and make fun of you for doing it wrong.
Yep.
So, but that's part of the fear, I think, is that not only will they not do it correctly, but that it will be permanently left on their record, like a principal, you know, like a disciplinary record.
Like, that's right.
They'll never get into college because they can't Google what? I don't know. How to use your iPhone, I guess.
I think that there is an underlying thing from what I see here as to how to get more women to listen to podcasts. And I think that this might work better than anything else, is to, as a woman, to talk to another woman and tell them to listen to a specific podcast, to just share that. Because I know that there's a lot of things that I've done and that have influenced me in terms of having female friends, that I try certain makeup, I'll try a brand of clothes, I'll go to a specific store to buy something, or I'll buy a book based on their opinions. I feel that one-on-one kind of insight into something will really get a woman to go out of her way to go get it. Like, there's been stuff that I've done that I would have never in a million years gone into a store and bought a specific thing if it wasn't for another one of my friends saying, like, no, this is like the best pair of jeans, seriously. So, and I'm like, okay, sure, because I trust them.
Yeah.
So there's something about that as opposed to just advertising and also taking into consideration that you can't just share, like, here's a new podcast episode. Like, what does that mean? What is a podcast episode? Like, how can we make it so that it seems like super, like, this conversation, like the way that you post some stuff, like this conversation I had with so-and-so is really great because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's not talking about a podcast episode, but that's what it is. But you're talking about
interview or whatever.
Yeah. So that it's more about the content that they can expect as opposed to the thing it is, because that immediately causes somebody to not want to step into it. If I was like, this is a podcast episode.
Yeah. It's like, same with blog posts. Geez. So
true.
Anytime I see read my latest blog post, I roll my eyes.
Yeah.
But if you tell me you wrote about, you know, today I wrote this in-depth look at women and, you know, gender inequality in the workplace or whatever, mm-hmm. then I'd be like, all right, that sounds interesting.
Yep.
But your blog post, like just saying my blog post.
It just makes you not want to. Yeah. It just somehow, what does that mean? So I feel that maybe the language or maybe even testing that kind of stuff. And I would be really intrigued to find out what you ladies think about this conversation. And, you know, I may be wrong about maybe the overall cultural generalization of maybe not offering technology to girls before, or, and I'm talking about the inner work, because you know what, I saw a commercial, I forgot what it was for, and it was about a little girl that was super intrigued and she kept on wanting to play with dirt and she kept on trying to, you know, break some toys apart, or she had, like, there were all these little things where she was just being herself and she was just intrigued. And every time she did something like that, one of her parents would go like, don't, you're going to get your dress dirty. No, you got to get your hair out of your face. No, don't touch that.
Yeah.
And so when you were doing that kind of stuff, like, you see the escalation of this commercial, and in the end, it's about the fact that little girls aren't interested in all the sciences and the math and all that kind of stuff. And it's not because they're not interested. It's because we don't allow them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's just something to think about, to kind of shift a perspective, perhaps see things in a new way. I don't know. Instead of relying on existing data of why don't women listen to podcasts, right? Maybe take the podcast out of the equation and just share your work and just help to get the actual work to be heard.
The truth is, like, you don't have to listen in iTunes. You just go to the website and hit play.
Yeah. True.
It's a big deal.
But yeah. You'd be surprised at how many people don't really know how to do that either. But
no, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So that's kind of crazy.
It does make me sad.
Yeah, that would be that. Yeah, yeah. So anyway. I think that we've covered this one enough for today, but, you know, maybe at some point, because I know that you ladies are very interested in finding more data about women listening in podcasts, that listen
too.
To podcasts, and I have been searching for that, so if I do
I
come...
I expect Libsyn to supply it.
Well, you know, this is a whole different thing, because this is about listeners. This is about... This is a whole other... It's like Edison should do that. I left a message...
You shouldn't do it.
I left a message...
Really should tell us about the podcasters. Really.
Yeah, exactly. We'd have like information about the women who are podcasting, but we don't have any information about listenership. But I know Edison had, I think a while ago, we posted this in the group. Somebody else posted in this group something about like podcasting is more popular than you would think or something like that. And I followed this guy's blog post to his personal blog post. And I requested him, who works at Edison, to do some more work on women's stuff. So I think that maybe if we can go over to Edison and comment and say, like, what about women? What about women specific podcast listeners? Because they have like people who are listening to podcasts, the radio and all that stuff, but there's no gender stuff involved.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would definitely want to know for sure.
Yeah, but if you have any information or any insight in terms of why women don't listen to podcasts, or why women, well, I also know when I know why I listen to podcasts, it's the easiest thing for me to do. It's the least I can do, I can multitask.
Yeah, I can tell you why they do.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many great reasons why women do listen to podcasts.
But also, if you are a podcaster, I mean, often they'll tell you.
True.
They'll tell you why they listen. Thank you. I listen while I'm packing. I listen while I'm on the plane. I listen while I'm in the shower. I listen while I'm cooking. I listen while I'm in the car. I hear that all the time.
I hear it all the time as well. I have like these amazing people who out of the blue come in and tell me, you know, because I now for my podcast, and I feel so awfully guilty. I haven't published an episode now in over a year, and I'm still getting people going, thank you so much for your podcast. I've been using it because, nice. And they tell me why. Yeah. And how great it is for them to have it. So it's a pretty incredible piece of just like another educational piece, a way to connect with community. There's so much goodness. I just wish that.
It yeah, was you probably hear every medical problem and how you're solving it. I hear, thanks for the laugh.
I do hear stuff like that. I do hear that. Except what's so hard, nice though, stuff. Is, well, like sometimes I'll get a random email of somebody going like, I have sciatica. Which yoga pose should I do? And I'm like, I don't know you. I don't know your body. I don't
Start
know your practice.
Your doctor,
I know
yo.
Yeah. I don't know how to help you. I need to see you. People hire me for lots of money for me to do that for them.
But you can't see them on Skype, can you?
No. I mean, I think, you know, that's one of the reasons. Like, I had Jason Van Orden. He, like, you know, we talked. He's like a mentor of mine, I guess, in a virtual sense. And I just met him and I was talking to him about, you know, the yoga business and how it's going, because he's really intrigued about it as well. And he likes my clients. They were all CEOs. And he's like, why don't you just focus on like higher end private clients and all this stuff? And online. And to be honest, it's really hard to do my work online. It really is hard because it's all super intuitive and very energetic. And I do a lot of adjustments and a lot of physical stuff. And I can't see that when I'm on Skype.
Yeah, of course not.
I can't. So that's why I don't do it.
No.
But, all right, dude, we are done with this one. Ladies, please send us your feedback over at feedback@shepodcast.com. And we would love to hear your thoughts on why people or women don't listen to podcasts.
That would also, be please awesome. Comment in the group, shepodcast.com/group. It's a huge Facebook group, almost 700 women, all podcasters, which is awesome and amazing, I think. And what else? And go to shepodcast.com. And if you are listening and you have a show and you're not in the directory, shame on you, man.
Shame on you. Put yourself in the directory.
Right now, lady.
Shepodcast.com. In fact, I'm going to put that right at the top of our show notes. So right at the top of the show notes, just click through shepodcast.com and then go to the directory and submit your show if you're not part already and if you're a woman. So.
Yes. It's on the homepage. It's a giant banner in the middle. I don't know why, but people always ask me where it is.
Like, I know, right? I think people are just like thinking that they're going to see the exact
button in the middle. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we should consider making like a landing page of just like, this is the directory. Submit your name here.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, because you know what? I send people the directory now when I have like some of my friends are like, what podcast should I go on? Oh. I just send them to the directory. And also for women who have shows that want guests or you want to interview podcast, some of the podcasters in there are amazing.
Yeah. There's all the so many. Your mind will be blown.
Yeah. So not to do a little commercial, but there you have it.
There you have it. Right on. Yeah. All right, then. I think we're all done.
Yay. Well, thank you guys for listening.
Okay. Bye. The rest.